Welcome to the Farmers Weekly Podcast. This episode recorded on Friday, the 12th of May, 2023. From the Farmers Weekly News Desk, I'm Johan Tasker.
And I'm Hugh Broome.
This week, MPs slam DEFRA's IT systems, putting food safety at risk.
On the markets with the latest prices and a report from Carlisle as sheep values surge.
Pig producers come together to discuss global opportunities after years of crisis. But will there be enough pork to go round?
And we celebrate all that's good about food from Surrey.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
But first, Rishi Sunak is to meet food and farming leaders to discuss the cost of living crisis that has seen inflation soar to eye-watering levels. Food and drink prices rose by a whopping 19.1% in the year to March, according to the Office for National Statistics. But what can we expect from the food summit convened by the Prime Minister at 10 Downing Street in the coming days? Well, two industry leaders who will be in attendance were at our Farmers Weekly Question Time event held this week at the Royal Agricultural University, Cirencester. First up, Country Land and Business Association President Mark Tufnell.
We're still sitting waiting for an agenda. It is actually called the UK Farm to Fork Food Summit. So in essence, I think it's about trying to get the Prime Minister to understand how food goes from the farm and ends up on the plate. My guess is it's not going to be four of us in the room having a chat with the Prime Minister. There'll probably be 70 people there, and there'll be lots of breakout groups, and there'll be a big fanfare at the end. But I hope at the end of it, there'll be some positive messaging coming out, which will bring in some of the health issues that got forgotten about from Henry Dimbleby's report, because there's some jolly good food out there. It's how we eat it, what our diet is that's the problem, how we link all those departments together, education, health, and DEFRA itself.
That's CLA President Mark Tufnell. Also going along to the Food Summit will be Nick Allen, Chief Executive of the British Meat Processors Association.
We have debates about fairness in the supply chain. Actually, the people that are getting the fairest deal out of the supply chain is the consumer. And somehow we need to actually sort of turn this round and actually get people to value food and understand that they do need to pay more for it. From a societal point of view, we should actually be working towards not giving people cheap food, but giving them an income so that they can afford food. And we seem to always turn this round into actually, well, we've got to give them sort of cheap food.
That's meat industry leader Nick Allen. Former DEFRA Secretary George Eustace gave our Farmers Weekly Question Time audience his thoughts too on the food summit and what to expect.
The question was what would I like to see? I think two specific things. First of all, I'd like to see the horticulture strategy or the component work streams that sat underneath that reinvigorated, because that is the area where in the supply chain we've got the greatest vulnerability, and it's where our national resilience is weakest. So I would like to see that restarted. I think the second area links to the further question that was raised around contracts. We created a power under the Agriculture Act for the government to regulate for fair dealing and transparency in markets. And we've done it in dairy already, albeit a sort of initial first step. I think there's a very strong case for doing it now on pigs in particular, and also on eggs. Because what we're seeing is parts of the agricultural supply chain where the supply from farmers is quite fragmented, and you've got quite large processors in the middle. And there's a lack of clarity about whether increased payments that might be coming from retailers down to those processors are then following through in a timely fashion to the farmers who are producing the food. And I think in particular in eggs, this is what we saw happen, that increase in price wasn't being passed back, either because supermarkets said we don't believe you, we think you're trying it on, or because processors didn't pass that money back to the farmers, so they just didn't restock. And we've got to try and deal with those sorts of problems. Then just a general point, we have to be realistic about these sorts of summits. I've sat through loads of them in my time. There'll be a large number of people in the room. In some way, be realistic about what will come out of that particular meeting. However, behind the meeting is something, in my view, that's very significant. And that is Rishi Sunak himself has called for this meeting. And the reason he's done it, it's born out of a recognition that it's been a stressful couple of years for everyone, whether they're in food manufacturing or in retailing or in farming. It's basically there's been a lot of stress on the food supply chain. And actually, he recognizes that and he wants to hear people's different perspectives on it. And I can just say this, that when Rishi Sunak was Chancellor, and I could always pick up the phone to him and he would regularly sort out problems there might be with officials in the Treasury in order to make sure that some of what he wanted to do on agriculture was protected and properly understood. He comes from a rural seat. He genuinely does care and is interested in farming. And I think it's a good sign that he's called this summit. And that means something in and of itself.
That's former Defra Secretary George Eustace.
So, Johan, this was the final date of your four-date tour, your question time pilgrimage across the UK. You started at Harper Adams, you went up to Scotland, you came down to Norwich, and you finished across at Cirencester at the Royal Agricultural University. Would you say there was a difference in what people were thinking about and talking about in those crowds based on their geography?
Do you know, Hugh, there was. When we were at Harper, the questions were very sort of farm-based. We had Farm Minister Mark Spencer there, of course. When we were in Scotland, they seemed to focus more on agri-environment measures and how farmers are working in tandem with the countryside to produce food and look after the environment. I'd say that at Norwich, at the John Innes Centre, that was very science-based, but I guess you'd expect that because of the venue. And then at Cirencester, it was more about farm policy and the lack of direction from Westminster when it comes to what sort of vision or future the government sees for agriculture. So, yeah, they were very, very different sets of questions at the different locations.
And you had on your panel at Cirencester, you had former Defra Secretary George Eustace. I mean, did he have a vision as to what the direction should have been before he left or was kicked out?
Do you know, he did defend he did defend his time in office, which saw the free trade agreements struck in principle, at least with Australia and New Zealand. And afterwards, he stood up as a backbench MP in the House of Commons and admitted that perhaps that deal was not as good as it could have been, and it was in fact a bad deal for farmers. He defended that, saying that he had spoken out in cabinet while in government, fighting the corner for farmers. But when you're a cabinet minister, you sign up to this concept of collective responsibility, where you know, you do lose some of the battles that you fight within government itself.
Yeah, obviously Boris Johnson wanted to get the old free trade agreements over the line, even though they're of little or no value to the UK economy, as we know. And then there was a lot of talk about this farming summit, which is coming up next week. Is this just a puff piece, Johan? I mean, Bank of England this week said that inflation, the reason it's stubbornly high is because of food prices. Is this the Prime Minister's counter to that, to make it look like he's doing something to help the consumer at large?
Yeah, I mean, there is this this food summit called by Rishi Sunak, something that the NFU has wanted for a long time. Nick Allen from the British Meat Processors Association was on our panel, as was Mark Tufnell from the Country Land and Business Association, and both of them were saying they've been invited to this summit, but they haven't actually seen an agenda. They don't know what's going to be discussed. So they could be just two people in the room of many, many representatives from across the food and farming sector. So whether this is just going to be a talking shop, whether it's just going to be a photo opportunity, whether Rishi Sunak just wants to be seen to be doing something, that's something that the government is going to have to sort of struggle against, because I can't see that this summit is actually going to solve anything or resolve anything, Hugh.
It's, as Stavros used to say on Saturday Night Live, it's called a summit because they've got a summit to talk about, but not obviously in this particular case. I think it's called a summit because they've decided to pull everyone together after the NFU asked for it months ago. And food prices are surging away. I suppose the one thing that you do, you question, don't you, Johan, with everyone saying, oh, inflation's all down to these food prices being so high. And you just think, well, yeah, the reason the industry is in the turmoil it's in now, it's because food prices just haven't gone up properly with inflation for the last 30 years. So you wonder, yeah, where can you go from here as a government other than have a load of people round for tea and look like you're actually doing something?
Yeah, and it's a problem not just affecting the UK. I mean, Italy has actually held what people have dubbed a pasta summit because pasta prices are so high, increased by 17.5%. And of course, that's a major, major food staple in Italy. And the government there wants to be seen to be doing something. Look, it's clear that many farmers are not able to make a living off, struggling to make a profit from food production because input prices are so high. So farmers feel that food prices are too low, and yet consumers are faced with this food inflation on the supermarket shelves, and they're finding food increasingly unaffordable. So it's clear that something is wrong somewhere in the food system. Food's too cheap for farmers, but too expensive for consumers.
The ever ongoing debate of food pricing. Look, we're going to talk more about this food summit with Abby later in the podcast and some controversy about who hasn't and hasn't been invited. Other things that were discussed at the event, John Price, the farmer, of course, who was jailed for reprofiling parts of the river that runs through his farm in Herefordshire, he came up in conversation. Was the concern at the from the crowd at the level of the penalty? I mean, he got 12 months inside, didn't he?
He did 12 months inside, and the judge recommended that he serve at least 6 of those months. John Price is appealing that conviction in the coming days. The question was, did the panel think that that penalty would serve as a deterrent to other farmers? And people were pointing out that, you know, this was a big high-profile case, but not all farmers go down this route of just taking the law into their own hands and continuing to do what they want to do to rivers and other environmental features on their land. So he did wrong, but don't tar all farmers with the same brush was the message there.
And are we likely to see another round of Farmers Weekly Question Time events?
I certainly hope so, Hugh. I mean, this has been really, really good to get out there into the regions and give Farmers Weekly readers the opportunity to quiz the people and the policy makers who affect the way that they do business. You'll have to watch this space. I hope that there is another one. We are looking at options perhaps for later in the year. But yeah, watch this space.
Ever wondered why your farm management system can't be as simple as your machinery to operate? FendtOne is the answer that you've been looking for. FendtOne combines the onboard world of machine operation with the offboard world of the farm office in a simple and intuitive system. FendtOne Offboard makes management of your fieldwork, machines and team a breeze in the office or on the go on any mobile device. Create jobs and upload them to your machine's terminal with the press of a button. Then FendtOne Onboard takes over. The operator receives the job, starts it, and sets to work. When finished, they close the job, and the data is transferred back to FendtOne Offboard for storage and analysis at a later date. FendtOne cuts out paperwork, multiple tools and systems, driving efficiency and profitability. For more information, speak to your local dealer or visit fendt.com/FendtOne. It's Fendt, because we understand agriculture.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
The government is putting food safety at risk. That's according to a group of MPs from the Public Accounts Committee. They've been scrutinising how efficient or how robust DEFRA's IT systems are, and they found some big holes and some big gaps. Looking at this story is Farmers Weekly's deputy editor, Abby Kay, who joins me now. Abby, where's this all going wrong?
They think that they're outdated, inefficient and expensive. So DEFRA does have a real big problem with what they call legacy IT systems. So these are systems that are basically running on old programs. And that's what the Public Accounts Committee is warning. They're saying it's posing a risk to food safety and also our ability to handle an animal disease outbreak potentially. So up until very recently, when DEFRA did invest some millions in a new system, vets were having to buy old laptops off eBay to record bovine TB results, which is, I mean, it's shocking really when you think about it, isn't it? I mean, how are they going to cope if there was another outbreak, say, of African swine fever on top of avian influenza and bovine TB? It's just going to be really difficult for them to manage.
It is. I mean, the TB thing is crazy. We've just been involved in radial testing here and talking to the vets. They're having to hand key in the measurements. You know, it's absolutely ludicrous.
That's what this report is saying. So a lot of the DEFRA arm's length bodies, a lot of the DEFRA family, so to speak, they're still using paper forms, which when you think about it in today's world, it is quite shocking, really, because we are living in a digital world. But yeah, some of these really important systems, they're still reliant upon passing paper around.
It is daft. So in terms, so the big fear of the Public Accounts Committee is that it would have an impact, and particularly thinking about disease surveillance, which is obviously ongoing. But more importantly, if there was an outbreak of something, the data wouldn't be where you want it when you need it.
Exactly that, yeah. I mean, they are doing some digitalization of movement licensing processes. But yeah, industry saying it's just not enough. But, you know, it all comes down to money at the end of the day. DEFRA has a limited budget. Where do they spend it? And they are prioritizing spending on IT for the environmental land management schemes at the moment, which is completely understandable. If they weren't doing that, people would be complaining. But then you're left in a situation where some of these older, really important systems, until they break, it's not a problem. But if they do break, it's going to be a real issue.
And then we've got Livestock Information Programme, which has been ongoing for nearly 10 years. They've not been afraid to spend, you know, getting on for over 100 million on that. And we're not actually any further forward. It's a bit of a calamity. Is there any recommendation here, do you think? Is there any route out of this? Or do they basically just need to get organised and spend money?
Well, they would say that they have made significant progress on improving the resilience of their technology. They have got an investment plan, and the Public Accounts Committee report does acknowledge that they have delivered some new and improved services. But again, it is all down to money and time. So DEFRA is investing, I think it's something like £870 million in better infrastructure and digital systems. But it's a matter of time. How quickly can this be done? How quickly can people migrate from one system to another? It's a difficult situation for DEFRA to be in.
And as always, the spectre of value for money, or lack of value for money, for public IT
exactly.
projects, which is a scary one. Now, looking forward to next week, Abby. We spoke about it earlier with Johan because it came up at Farmers Weekly's question time. But there's this summit going on at number 10, this Food and Farming Summit. What have you heard about it, and who's actually invited?
Oh, very exciting. We do not know who's going. There have been a couple of people who have asked for an attendee list, and they've basically been told they'll need to get it under Freedom of Information request. So it's been shrouded in secrecy, the attendee list. But from what I can gather, it's basically going to be chiefs of supermarkets and their top technical teams, some farming industry bodies, but no NGOs, no charities, and they are hopping mad about that.
I think they're pretty cross. And presumably this is off the back. I mean, the NFU were calling for a government summit, you know, a year ago when input price inflation was rampant and it looked like we were all going to stop farming because of the price of everything. And here we are 12 months on and they've sort of delivered it.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. So Rishi Sunak, during the first Conservative leadership election campaign, there were a couple, weren't there? He promised the National Farmers Union that he would personally chair a UK-wide food security summit. And there is a danger, I think, that this event could risk just becoming a tick box exercise. So the government sees it as, right, we've promised to hold this. That's off our list now. We've done it, without actually thinking that it's going to have any impact on policy making per se. So there is that risk that potentially it could be a lot of warm words and no action. I think Rishi as well is looking at it in terms of how he can meet one of his key goals, which is to reduce inflation. So he's concerned that food price rises are driving inflation and that will affect his election prospects. So this is very much going to be a summit looking at how food price inflation can be quashed. But what that will mean for the farmer, I'm not quite sure, because obviously traditionally the supermarkets have always looked to farmers to make up their margins when food prices are going up. They've looked to drive them down at the producer end, and that's a bit of a risk.
It's a big risk at the moment, isn't it? Because if they previously, when they've done that, there's been an abundance of whatever product is they want. But in many cases now, there is not an abundance of product. And so basically, at the end of the day, we're not really expecting anything to come out of this. This is a photo op, and it's the grocer claims that Jeremy Clarkson's been invited.
Yeah, it does seem quite weird that, doesn't it, that you would invite other farming groups and the top supermarket chief execs and then Clarkson and Caleb on the side. I'm not quite sure what the rationale is for inviting them, but I'm sure Clarkson will make his voice heard if he is there, but whether or not he shows up, who knows?
It'll be interesting to see if anything comes out of it or if it's just a pretty number 10 picture with Caleb on the steps of number 10. Abby Kate, thank you very much.
Would you like to unleash the full potential of your varieties? Our free MyKWS service supports you with digital tools that help you with relevant decisions around your cultivation, as well as a helpful email service which informs you about relevant topics at the right time so that you can get optimal returns at the end of the season. To find out more, visit kws-uk.com.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
You're indeed listening to the Farmers Weekly Podcast. A very warm welcome to you wherever you happen to be listening to us from. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can. The email address is podcast@fwi.co.uk. That's podcast@fwi.co.uk. It would be great to hear from you. Johan, you've had a busy week pinging all over the country and then doing your question time thing. We should have said earlier that question time event will be available as a podcast in the coming days, will it not?
It will indeed, Hugh. It will indeed. Yeah, right across the country. I think two things that stand out for me is there are potholes everywhere. The roads are terrible. Worst I've ever seen in, more than 30 years of driving around. That was one thing. And the other thing, Hugh, is that it seems to be wet everywhere as well, or certainly things have still not dried out this spring. And in the Crop Watch, in this week's Farmers Weekly magazine, that is a big theme. Becky Finbo sees sulphur deficiencies in rain-affected crops. Stephen Harrison says maize drilling is a horror story. Connor Campbell experiences a greater challenge to retain tillers with urea fertilizer. And Ian Richards discusses septoria control in winter wheat. And also Keith Challen in the Midlands sees this season's hopes wash away in the wet spring. So it's not going too well for the arable boys and girls, Hugh.
Look, the forecast is set to be a bit better in terms of, dare I say it, certainly down here in the south. Next week looks the weekend's looking good. Next week could be good. Potholes, Johan, I'll tell you what's going to happen, and it's a good thing for farmers, is what's going to happen is the government's going to unveil a big pothole fund sometime in the next few months ahead of the next election. And that will mean if all the local authorities go mad on potholes, that road planings will be in abundance, because we've got a road planings drought here in Surrey at the moment. So we need some big contracts, because I could do with a few hundred tons. Right, moving on elsewhere. Talking of wet weather, Johan, one thing I noticed actually elsewhere, not in the Farmers Weekly, but it's worth taking note of and just log it in your brain at the moment. We are being utterly soaked here. Europe, though, is in a major drought. Did you realise that? There are some serious drought issues going on in Europe at the moment, which could have an impact on markets as we go forward. In the magazine, there's also a piece on the markets page talking about something we've mentioned before on the podcast. As ever, cereal stocks, carryover stocks into next year could have an impact on commodity values as well in the short term, basically saying there's probably more grain on farm than people or the market has anticipated, which is impacting on prices. And it could be because people are panicking, Johan. If you remember, you know, the beginning of or the end of last summer, going into the autumn, people were panicking about feed availability and supply. So they bid hard. And then, of course, they fed less all winter because prices have been so high. Also, there's another piece on the markets page talking about how calf slaughterings are up 20%. Again, because of the cost of inputs, a lot of calves have been killed early.
In the machinery section, James Andrews takes a look at CF Moto, the Chinese manufacturer who has a new ATV line. A made in China sticker isn't necessarily something to be sniffed at these days, says James, who gets behind the wheel of the latest four-wheel offerings from CF Moto. Some likes and gripes there laid out in the page. While the West has been casually writing off Chinese products as cheap tat, manufacturers there have been busy beavering away to make their products better, a lot better, he says. So there's a couple of pages there on that ATV range in the machinery section.
Have to check that out. Debbie James, another cracking Debbie James article, page 26, 27. Farm holidays. It's looking at glamping and farm holiday offers and basically saying, which let's face it, guys, this is whatever you're doing, whether you're doing holidays, box schemes of meat or, you know, stick whittling. If you want to succeed, you have got to stand out from the rest of the market. It's not good enough just to say it's on a farm or it's local. But she focuses on farm holiday offerings, glamping, accommodation, and saying that if you want it to, the people that she speaks to, says if you want to make it work and you want to sell your product, you've got to do it well.
Some advice for potato growers, again continuing the wet theme, some advice for potato growers ahead of the blight spraying season. Trying to minimize the chance of missing a blight spray when the wet weather sets in, there's some advice there from Hutchinson's potato agronomist Andrew Goodinson.
And in the machinery section, the thing for me was the Vervant, I think that's how you pronounce it, the Dutch company that makes these giant slurry tankers, self-propelled slurry applicators, call them what you will. They've sold five of them in the UK this season, and then they've just brought to market as if they're a big, massive 20-odd tons of slurry it carries thing that goes offset down the field wasn't big enough. They've now brought one to the market, which is a massive slurry tanker, and then they put a trail tanker behind it, Johan. So it's got 22 ton up the front and then 18 tons in the tanker behind. It's a pretty epic thing. You're going to shift some serious volume. Obviously, it's aimed at the high volume, fast application world that is emptying out digestate stores in the autumn and the spring. As at the moment, I really would not want to be in that position, because even though this thing goes offset and it's got mega flotations and all the tools in the box, variable tire pressures, I'd imagine there's some pretty wet places where you just wouldn't, where you can't get at the moment. And imagine getting that stuck, yo. And it's bad enough getting a smallish tractor stuck, but that thing all loaded up with all 22 ton at the front and 18 ton of slurry at the back, you'd be several diggers later trying to get that out of the mud.
Out of the mud and into the markets, Hugh. A lot going on this week in terms of commodity prices and a special look at sheep. What's happening?
Thank you very much, Johan. The finished steer deadweight price goes up again this week. It goes up to a couple of pence. 492.6 is the UK SQQ average for deadweight steers. It goes up from 490.9 last week. Live weight average also goes up a penny to 275.1. Sheep prices have had a good old surge up this week. We'll talk about that a bit later on in this piece. Deadweight SQQ has gone up to 669.3. That's up from 654.9 last week. So they're still surging on despite the Ramadan trade, despite all the other demands. They don't show any signs of dropping back just yet. Live weight prices back slightly on the week as they tend to lag behind the deadweight, 291.5 back from 296.2. But some good news there. And I say we'll talk about that more in a minute. To the arable markets, they've all come back a little bit with the exception of feed wheat, which has knocked on £2, 179.70, up from 177 last week. Milling wheat is back ever so slightly, back 10p a ton, 248.60. Feed barley drops back about £3 to £164.30. Oilseed rapes drop back nearly £10, 347.50 this week. Feed peas stand on at 234. Feed beans stand on at 228 a ton. Diesel's moving to the right place, back another penny this week. Your average Wednesday morning UK phone round litre of diesel this week comes out at 68.10 pence per litre. So it's back exactly a penny on last week. Now, turning our attention back to those sheep and cattle prices, joining me now from Harrison and Hedgerington, H&H Auctions up in Carlisle, is James Little. He's a senior auctioneer at the company, specialising in pedigree, but also selling normal commercial stock, both at Carlisle and recently at Kirby Stephen. These coal ewe prices, they've suddenly come strong from nowhere. What sort of values have you been seeing?
Yeah, coal ewes, especially in the last week to a fortnight at the back of Ramadan, they've really rocketed. The coal ewes on Monday averaged pennies shy of £130. which, yeah, astronomical. And probably the plainer end of the ewes have seen the real lift. You know, there's plenty hill breeds getting well over 100 pound, which is a fantastic return for those guys. And the obviously the big heavy ewes, they probably aren't just as dear as they have been at the peak, but they're still well into the 200s, which is fabulous, really.
Yeah, no, some really strong money. And where do you think that demand's coming from? Have we just started to run out of coal ewes all of a sudden, or is there an export market suddenly kicked on?
Yeah, I think it's like anything, supply and demand, isn't it? The yow numbers probably have seen a bit of a dip of late. People have been busy lambing.
And what's the and do you still think there's still, because we've seen in other parts of the country, there's quite a lot of carryover hoggets from last year. The market was obviously really slow in the autumn, and then people were struggling because of the weather, cost of feed. Do you think you've still got a fair bit of carryover of last year's stock on the lamb side?
The hog numbers, I was quite worried about them a month or 6 weeks ago, but the whole hogget job has, they have actually come out not too bad in numbers. The last 2 months we've sold more on the year, and trade has saved a lot of them. There was a few guys, January, February, dairy guys that were buy them yearly. They started to offload them quite rapidly. Just really, the grass is obviously more important to them than the store sheep. But so our numbers did jump quite dramatically earlier on in the year, which I thought would maybe see us tail off. But touch wood, the numbers have been strong. We sold, about three times more hogs on Monday than we did this day last year. So it's pretty good, and the trade's there to match as well.
I was going to say the values seem to be supporting the volume, which is good. We haven't seen the values absolutely go back despite those high volumes. And then on the cattle side, I mean, obviously the fat price is still going up week on week. It doesn't show any signs of abating. Does it show any signs of abating, the fat cattle that you sell in the ring? Were you guys?
No, I think both the live ring and other outlets, the trade looks to be there. I think we're just getting into a new horizon of where cattle prices need to be. And I think it's just something that we're going to have to get used to. Values are going to be higher. And this should be the new norm, I would think. It looks pretty stable and good for the foreseeable. So,
And then in terms of store cattle, yearlings and that sort of stuff, obviously you're getting busy with store cattle sales now. There's plenty of numbers coming forward there. And are the values matching the end, the fat prices?
Yeah. The values of store cattle are fantastic. I mean, we sell weekly here in Carlisle. The younger cattle, the 12-month-old, nice continental cattle, you've been kind of seeing a lot of them, 1,300 to 1,600 pound. And the strong cattle, plenty of cattle on a Wednesday, getting up over 2,000, which is tremendous money. I think the last few weeks, the stars have been averaging over 1,400. So they're well up there, and loads of customers for them. So
good values. And one of the other things you look at, James, or you get involved is the pedigree side of life. I mean, presumably these commercial values are seeing, you know, good values on the pedigree side. It's being amplified through that, is it?
Yeah, I mean, we're just getting into bull sale season. I sold the limousines last week. We averaged over 9,000 with the bulls. And the old rule of thumb was, 10 star cattle to buy your bull, but people haven't just quite got to that sort of level. I mean, your commercial men, you'd see them kind of 10 grand plus, I suppose, but you can still buy a good bull 5-6 grand. You know, it's they probably do look the best value. Your breeding bull still probably looks the best value of anything. I think the beef breeding units, the heifers and calves and bulling heifers and things, will see a real lift this time, but the bulls are still good value, I would say.
That's James Little from H&H Auctioneers.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
Now, this week saw pork producers and the general industry come together at the Pigs Tomorrow conference, with pig prices higher than they have been for many years. Producers at the event were upbeat. Farmers Weekly's business reporter Charlie Reeve went along, and he caught up with National Pig Association Chair Rob Mutimer.
It's been excellent to get together after what's been a really tough time for the industry. Had really good perspective on what's happening in the world as a from the first speakers right the way down to what's happening in our market. So, and it's a time for pig producers to catch up with processors and other people within the industry, just to chew the fat a little bit and work out where we're going and how we're going to do it.
Definitely, and other people we've heard from today, we've covered lots of different countries, bits on China, Spain, Denmark. Can UK producers really compete on the global stage?
Yeah, we can. We can't compete with the low-cost production of certain places, but we have our own niche markets. We facilitate our own home market, and we can still export parts of the pig that we don't eat on our own turf to places like China and Southeast Asia that makes us competitive.
What's the biggest challenge facing the sector at the moment?
I think as a processor, you'd say the biggest challenge is finding enough pigs to fulfil our market. And it's really important that we keep our supermarket deals that we have and making sure that we do put the fresh pork on the supermarket shelves. But in the long term, the sector's got to be sustainable. We've got to be able to produce enough pork at the right money and receive an income so that we can invest on our farms to make us competitive going forward.
And what needs to be done to overcome this?
I do welcome the government for giving us some grants. Because we know full well that we do need to invest in technology, and it will help people and producers when they're getting back into positive margins to invest in their farms so we've got a future.
Yes, yeah, and one more thing we've heard quite a lot about is obviously on the supply chain review.
Yeah.
It's great to hear that this is making progress now. I know we've not got any dates yet, but it's definitely something to look forward to. What sort of the NPA's feelings on the review so far?
I think the NPA is absolutely delighted that they had over 300 respondents to the review. Also very pleased that it seems to have a balanced approach. We can't tie ourselves up so that we've got contracts that no one wants to sign and no one wants to be part of. So there has to be a light touch, but there is some regulatory aspect coming down the line which will help independent producers when times are tough to at least have to be treated fairly.
So joining me now is Farmers Weekly's business reporter, Charlie Reeve, who you heard in the interview there with Rob Mutimer from the NPA. Charlie, the feeling, the vibe at the conference, quite upbeat considering the sort of hell that the pig industry's been through for the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, there's kind of a bit of a turning of the tide, really, and prices are starting to pick up. We've seen them increase over the last year, really, and some are starting to recoup some of those losses that they had been facing.
Yeah, and indeed, those are the farmers that have stayed in it for the long term, and that's some commitment as well. And one of the interesting things that in your article that you talk about is the fact that production elsewhere in Europe, you know, in some of these super intensive countries, like, for example, Denmark, those guys have felt that price drop, and they've been hurting as well, and their tonnage produced will also fall.
Definitely, yeah. So some really interesting figures around Denmark, actually. In the last year alone, roughly 100,000 breeding sows have gone away from production. And I mean, you just have to look at what's happened in the last few weeks. Danish Crown have shut some of the sites in the country as well.
And presumably they've closed those down because they haven't got the volume of pig meat to process.
That's right, yeah. They just weren't filling their killing days and they had to make some cutbacks.
So long term, what was the general consensus is the world is, you know, pork supply globally. Is that likely to get tight, do you think, going forward?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, so there's definitely a tighter supply in pigs globally in 2023 and into the next year as well. Looking at global consumption, that's likely to remain fairly flat as well, although there's likely to be some per capita consumption drops in the EU and in Europe. Looking further afield to Asia, there's increases there still taking place.
So the general sentiment amongst UK pig producers at the conference was, yeah, there's opportunity there. Presumably the biggest thing we've got, though, is our cost of production presumably is higher than a lot of our global competitors.
Sure, and I think that's a really interesting point, really. Can the UK really compete on this global stage? You only have to look at somewhere like Spain, and they're producing, I think it's something around 215% self-sufficient for pork. The UK is definitely still a net importer, and should it be focusing more on its domestic market, or does it need to be looking at these export export opportunities for the fifth quarter.
The pork supply chain review, this review's been going on. It's obviously been ongoing since the midst of the whole pork crisis 2 years or so ago. What's the likely outcome, do you think, of that? Or is it just likely to be yet another talking shop?
We heard from Mark Spencer at the event, and he did kind of say that this is a longer term solution and they didn't want it to just be a quick fix. We know so far that written contracts are needed to be created, but we're still really waiting on some dates from DAFRA at the moment.
Farmers Weekly's Charlie Reeve from the Business Desk. Thank you very much.
So, Hugh, some interesting points there from Rob Mutimer. Are we really bouncing back with this sector?
Look, I think that there's no doubt when you look at the price of pork everywhere has gone up. Oh, it's the same old story. We've heard it before. You know, why is the beef price up? Because there's not so many cows in the world. Why is the pig price up? Oh, no, I can't say that on air. It's too rude, but it involves the world's Sherlock. Yes, the pig numbers are down, aren't they, everywhere? So prices are up. I think the real standout for me, Johan, is obviously the carnage that the poor UK pig industry has been through. Utter devastation over the last 3-4 years. Even before COVID, things were not good because of the ASF issues. And the big, if you remember, you go back 3 years or 2.5 years, the German pig or pig processing industry exports a heck of a lot of product to China. Suddenly, if you remember, that was the start. It stopped overnight and boom, European prices hit the floor because all the cold sow meat goes into Germany to be turned into Wurst and all that stuff that goes all over the world. It stopped. So that was the start. It's been through utter hell. It's come out the other side. The prices are high, but there's just not the pig meat there. And what is, for me, is a real take home on this pig conference, what came out of it, is when you look at the mega intensive big volume producers like the Danish numbers are back big time as well. So yeah, where's the world going to get its pork from?
And where is the world going to get its pork from?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I suppose on the upside, pig systems, unlike, I suppose, cattle systems, you know, you can replenish stocks quicker in terms of volumes. But also, I think, you know, markets are going to be tight. Now, the Chinese still a big importer of all parts of the pig, and it's a major part of the Chinese diet. But producers all over the world will be struggling to get stocks together to make the most of these high prices. I think going forward, though, certainly for the UK producers, and you would like to think, has it not rung bells with UK retailers and UK supply chain that they really have to go back to the drawing board in terms of how they look at how contracts are structured, how the whole retail model of pork is structured? Difficult to do, I know, at this time with retail prices, as we said before, are so high. But going forward, if you want sustainable supply and you don't want to see gaps appearing in supermarket shelves, then you've really got to look at some novel ways of keeping producers ticking over and keeping volumes coming into your shop.
And you say utter devastation for the UK pig sector over the past 2 or 3 years or even longer. Hugh, when people generally leave farming, they don't come back. Is that true for pig producers, or do you think we're going to see people piling into pigs because they see that there's some money to be made finally?
I would imagine that there's pig units that have been mothballed. There are pig units also lend themselves quite easily, don't they, to be turned into, if they're indoor ones, to be turned into workshops or storage space. You know, in the last few years, we've seen pig units even used as cut rearing units. So you could potentially come back in. If you're coming in from outside, though, I suppose there's the opportunity to do the bed and breakfast pigs, which, you know, anyone with a barn, straw, labour and a tractor can do. But in terms of breeding and the infrastructure that goes with it, whether it's outdoor systems or indoor systems, you know, it's not something that you just jump into overnight. Like if you suddenly decided you want to start fattening sheep, you could buy an electric fence, find some ground and off you go. It's not as simple with pigs. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this develops. And let's hope these values stay on the right side of where they need to be to allow the people that are still in the game producing pig meat in the UK time to breathe and time to rebuild their businesses, hopefully more resiliently going forward for the future.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
Now, this Saturday sees a top celebration, Surrey Day, celebrating all that's good about Surrey, including the local food that's produced here. Now, quite often, and I say this as someone that comes from Surrey, people don't think we have any farms or indeed produce any food. But actually, we've got quite a few. I caught up earlier on with Marion McBurney, who runs Kingfisher Watercress Beds and Farm Shop just up the road from me. And she told me about producers in the county and those that were coming to her Surrey Day food fair.
Well, of course, there's watercress is grown in Surrey, and other growers that we use to stock our farm shop are Secrets at Milford. At the moment, we've got their asparagus and their leeks and the mixed salad. And as we go throughout the year, the crops change, and we always have whatever they can provide for our shop.
And you've got a bit of an open day going on here with some of your other producers. Who else is actually growing and selling in the county?
We've got Gray's Gelato coming. They're based at Polston Lacey. They're dairy farmers. And in more recent years, they've expanded into making their own gelato, which we stock in the farm shop. And they will be here with their trailer serving ice cream and sorbetto, and offering you the opportunity to try all their very interesting flavours.
And what else are people making in Surrey? Because we've got some cheeses, haven't we, still?
We've got Norbury Blue. Michaela will be here offering her Norbury Blue for everyone to taste. There is Sergio, who is a beekeeper and keeps hives at on Norbury Estate, and we sell his honey. He'll be here along with his honey, the skincare products he produces.
Which you can only produce in Surrey, wouldn't you?
The reason they've moved into the skincare products is because of the honey having its healing qualities.
So. That's very good. Now, tell us, your farm shop's huge business here, but also you're growing watercress. Yeah. And that is something you've done for many generations here. I mean, how is the watercress trade going? Is there still a lot of demand for what you produce?
With customers that come to the farm shop, there is still a huge demand. So it's, a great USB for us. And it makes it worth carrying on our plight in growing watercress. I am the fifth generation in the company, and it has got smaller as the years have progressed. We lost a lot of high street trade with the demise of the greengrocer, but our own shop proves just how popular it still is with people in Surrey and people further afield. And they come and visit us so they can get the fresh watercress from us.
And do you still take product up to London?
Yes, we supply a couple of wholesalers who then are providing our watercress to chefs. One of the wholesalers supplies to some of the top London chefs. We also have some of the pubs around here using our watercress. They put it especially on the menu from the spring onwards. And there's a local cafe, Maddings, over near Bramley, and they have watercress every week from us. They use it all of the menu.
But you'd be one of the few smaller growers left though in the south of the UK, wouldn't you? Now
we definitely are. We're the only one in Surrey. There's one in Wiltshire. There's one near Chichester. But the big watercress growers are down in Alsford, where actually at the end of the month there is the Watercress Festival, and you can go and enjoy all sorts of fun with watercress.
Hugh, many people listening to this, myself included to a certain extent, will be wondering if there really are farms in Surrey.
Don't you start. That's what everyone said that. I'm, 50 now, and everyone said that all my life. Wherever I've gone in the country, Johan, I remember
I remember going to Young Farmers National Council, and what the fact that I was about 12 and everyone else was 28 was a bit of a challenge. But then the fact that you stood up and said you came from Surrey, and they said, "What? There's only blooming farms in Surrey. We have got farms in Surrey, Johan. That's why we're celebrating Surrey Day and all that's good about Surrey, including the food, of which there's actually a bizarrely large amount of little niched sort of food producers we have. So yeah, it's a good thing."
So here's me travelling the country for Farmers Weekly Question Time, and you're just sticking your arm through the hedge with a microphone to interview your next door neighbour.
Look, I'm just, I think Marion's very special. Marion is one of a few, there's literally about three of them left, as you heard in the audio, independent watercress growers left in the south of the UK. There's a massive empire of watercress growing around Hampshire, in the centre of Hampshire near Winchester, near Alsford, but actually of independent standalones, there's literally about three of them left in the south, which I think is a phenomenal thing. And she has a heck of a business there. Yes, it's yummy mummy central in terms of, money's no object. They drive in their Range Rovers into her farm shop. But the offering she has in that shop is phenomenal. And as a, if you will, a sort of showcase of what can be produced locally. It just goes to show that you can actually do it. And the thing I think that's good about Marion's shop is that you can actually go up there, unlike a lot of farm shops, and some really good ones, there's some okay ones, and you can do pretty much a big shop there. So it's a good thing. It's a good showcase. And it is something to be celebrated. I think wherever you are in the country, stuff that's produced locally, if it's really good and it keeps people busy and it keeps them on the land and they can make money from it and consumers love it, hey, what's not to celebrate about that? It's a good outcome on all fronts.
Certainly sounds like it, keeping the Surrey stockbrokers well-stocked with watercress.
Yeah, and all other delightful goodies that are out there. Moving on, next week's Farmers Weekly podcast. Johan, what have you got?
Well, we won't be looking at watercress, Hugh, but we will be looking at agroforestry in Hampshire.
And I will be talking to John Royal from the NFU about something that's cropped up to do with international trade, particularly thinking about lambs and how you need to, going forward, we've got to come up with a novel way of proving that you've had a vet on the farm in the last year. But more on that next week. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can. It is podcast@fwi.co.uk. That's podcast@fwi.co.uk. Don't forget, and we haven't said this for a while, and it would be good if you jumped on there and pinged around. We get thousands of downloads every week, but a few reviews would be good, please, people. So get on your podcast platform, give us a 5-star review, and if you feel up to it, write a few lines as well about how wonderful the whole thing is, or not, as the case may be. But in the meantime, this has been the Farmers Weekly podcast for yet another week. Thank you so much for listening. I hope your week starts to dry out and life looks a bit better. I'm Hugh Broome. Until next week, goodbye.
And I'm Johan Tasker. Goodbye.